Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Roger Nober, chairman of the Surface Transportation Board. And joining us in our conversation is Dave Abel. Well, Roger, at the end of the last segment, you were talking about your career. You've been in both the legislative and executive branch. And I'm curious, how would you contrast or compare the management styles?
Well, from a management standpoint, it's interesting. They're both about process, but different kinds of process. On Capitol Hill, it's a legislative process where you both have to try to reach consensus within your own party and members on the one hand, and then with the minority on the other hand, and then bring that through one body, then sit down with the Senate, work out something, you know, with the other body, work out something with them, and then ultimately bring something to the president. And it's about reaching consensus, but in a broader way where a lot of people have different inputs into the process. And the goal was with a very small staff, and the goal was to really try to synthesize what are the key important things that, you know, the members that who you represent are trying to see accomplished, and what's the best way to see that accomplished in a way that gets to the president's desk. On Capitol Hill, there are many fewer people handling matters. It's a small group of folks who you're constantly having to work with, and you need to manage both the views of the members, the views of the external groups, and the views of the administration, and try to synthesize them all in a way that you think the members will understand. And from my standpoint, you know, the members trusted me when I was the chief counsel of the committee to know what I needed to know. But the judgment, the art of it, was to be able to tell them what they needed to know and to try to synthesize it in a way that they could make decisions. And that's a much more difficult thing than just telling people everything that you know. When I went to the administration, I found that there were many more people who were involved in various policy matters. Rather than having one or two, you might have, you know, departments of 100. Part of what they were doing was implementing programs on a day-to-day basis, and that's a different set of skills. And part of it is in implementing the general directives that are set out by the Congress. One of the interesting things I found in the executive branch was the importance, and some of the things are very similar. For example, dealing with the interest groups, dealing with Capitol Hill the same way, and understanding what the world at large thinks of the kinds of decisions that you're making. And those are similar kinds of judgments. On the other hand, within the administration, there are many more layers that one needs to go through. There's the operating administrations at DOT, then there's the full DOT and what the secretary wants, then there's the OMB White House end of things, where anything that has, you know, major policy or financial implications. And all of those are factors that go into a final decision. In some ways, it's not terribly unlike Capitol Hill, where the various, you know, interest groups and interested parties would all have their influence at some point. But in the end, the legislative process is a very personality-driven, almost an idiosyncratic process, if you will. And the administration process is very set and formal, and, you know, it goes up through a chain of command and has certain steps that have to be followed. And managing that in an effective way is different. It requires a different set of skills in managing legislation, and getting an appreciation for what those are has been, you know, it was very valuable time that I spent at DOT. Finally, I will say that one of the interesting differences between the administration and Capitol Hill is the difference to which folks in the administration can set the agenda in a way that you can on Capitol Hill. Even if ultimately, when it comes to, you know, the ability to affect statutes and policy from a macro level, in some ways you have a lot more ability on Capitol Hill to do that because you affect the laws that get passed. In the administration, the general perception in the world at large is that they really set the agenda and implement and are responsible for managing programs. And by and large, that's true. So what I found when I went to the agency is that simply, you know, taking action generated a good deal of interest and, you know, culture change. And so, and I learned that at DOT. Michael Jackson, whom I spent time with, was a master, if there ever was one, at understanding the ability to set the agenda and how to use that to accomplish your aims. And I hope I've been able to set forth just a little bit of what he taught me.
Roger, let's change gears a bit and talk specifically about the Surface Transportation Board. The reauthorization for the board passed earlier this year. Can you give us some highlights and tell us a bit about what was in the reauthorization?
Sure. It didn't get through the full process. It got through it. It's you know, was reported out by the Senate. It mainly reauthorized our agency for several years, which had been a point of contention with the ICC, that Congress didn't go in and periodically review it and make changes to the laws to accommodate to calibrate its regulatory regime to the marketplace. That led to some, you know, some very odd and unfortunate results that the ICC, you know, by the ICC, and led it to ultimately to people throw up their hands and say, we don't need the agency at all. And, you know, one of the things that's, and I'll get to the point, I'll get to the question in a minute, but the ICC, to a, sometimes in Congress you legislate by anecdote, and anecdote seemed to capture a mood. And the ICC was criticized for two kinds of cases. One was, it had a, it, back then it had 11 members, and there was a dispute on the trucking side as to what the, whether the rates you charge for carrying candy canes with straight tips ought to be the same as candy canes with bent tips. And you know, this went through a 5-year proceeding where the board ultimately voted and decided this. And people said, you know, for God's sakes, why in the world are we having a government agency deciding whether candy canes with straight tips or bent tips ought to be charged the same? And, you know, under the, if you looked at the doctrine just from a micro level, it fit and it was an important decision to make. But if you step back from a macro level and said, why in God's name is the government deciding this? How much does a box weigh? And pay it. You would think you would eliminate the agency and the doctrine, and what, by never being reauthorized, the ICC's doctrines and regulatory regime never caught up to the marketplace. So much pressure built that people just said, get rid of it. So I think reauthorization bills are important because they give people a chance to say, here's what the agency's mission is, here's what its statutory oversight is. If we think there ought to be changes, we'll make them and let the agency's mission and charges conform to the current, you know, current realities. The reauthorization bill was relatively sparse. It gave us a few more resources because we're going to try to take on some new missions going forward. It made some administrative changes to the way commissioners are appointed, which again were, you know, relatively minor things and within the Senate's prerogative. And it directed us to do one new major policy initiative, which was to look at ways that smaller shippers would be able to challenge rates before our agency. And again, that kind of a bill reflects general consensus with what our agency ought to do, and you know that the oversight process is helpful because it, you know, all the folks who are stakeholders in the agency have input into the legislative process, and if those kind, and if it gives us significant changes, then that shows we ought to be changing, and if there are very modest changes, it shows that we're basically on target. So, having been a congressional veteran, I think those reauthorizations are very important. I worked with the Senate on putting that together, and I hope that it gets through the Congress.
Now, with a number of the guests that we've had on the program, we've talked about the Surface Transportation Act reauthorization in the DOT. Well, what's the relationship between that reauthorization and its impact on the reauthorization for the board?
Substantively, very little. From a practical political standpoint, the reauthorization of the highway and transit programs is something that has to pass because tens of billions of dollars a year are tied to Congress deciding how that money is going to be spent. So that's a lot of legislative pressure to reauthorize surface transportation programs, and they have a tendency to kind of drag along all the other, you know, minor things with it. Our bill hasn't passed for several years because there are a core of senators and congressmen who feel very strongly that far more significant changes ought to be made. And in the legislative process, unless there's a reason why you have to do something, it gives people who have that kind of ability, they can't affirmatively accomplish what, you know, those kinds of changes, but they can stop a bill that doesn't do them. And that's the situation we've been in since 1998 with our agency. A large surface transportation bill, which, you know, I have a little bit of experience in having been the principal staff person for the one that's expiring, that kind of bill can drag, you know, you can just add all kinds of things to it, and so it's conceivable our reauthorization could get added to it. It also occupies a lot of the attention of the transportation world, and as we talked about earlier, it's not that big a world, so, you know, most of the folks who are focusing on things are focusing on that, because that's where, you know, that's where it's probably almost close to $300 billion will get spent over the next 6 years. That's a lot of money.
We also had, a couple of weeks ago, we had Emil Frankel, who's the Assistant Secretary for Transportation Policy. And he talked to us about the state of the passenger rail industry. Can you tell us the other side of the coin? Can you tell us a little bit about the state of freight rail transportation in the United States?
Sure. And I think it's both good news and some bad news. I think the good news is that our freight rail system has in many ways not been better for several generations. We have four reasonably strong and healthy companies that do the predominant amount of freight rail in the United States that are sort of not national companies, but regional companies. We then have several, you know, smaller but still significant major railroads, two Canadian and one American. And then we have a very vibrant and healthy short line industry, which are railroads that run really spurs or small segments of lines that connect with the major railroads and provide a feeder network. And from an operational standpoint, for the first time in many years, the amount of freight that railroads are carrying is growing. They have a growing they're able to attract business off of trucks. You know, containers that come in from ports are now primarily carried by railroads. And railroads have been able to focus their business rather than on shrinking their networks and avoiding losses, and instead on growing their businesses and improving their financial health. And I think that's so in many ways the rail system is in the best shape it's been in. It still faces challenges, though. It's a very expensive, capital-intensive business. About 18% of railroads' revenues need to go back into capital expenditures, which is by far the highest of any major industry in the United States. And because, as I said before, railroads are kind of a split personality. On the one hand, they have traffic which has to go on them. Coal, for example, that's mined and goes to power plants. Grain. It's what we some kinds of chemicals. It's what we call captive traffic, where the manufacturing process or the mining process or the milling process demands that the weight and volume and efficiencies of rail be used. But it's really there's not enough of a market for two rail lines to serve individual plants. So the shippers feel that they're, you know, captive, if you will, is the term of art, to one carrier, and that carrier has a lot of ability to charge them, you know, high prices. On the other hand, you know, and that traffic is pretty much a defined universe. I mean, we have all the chemical plants, all the power plants, and if new ones get built, it's relatively rare. On the other hand, for railroads to grow their market, it has to come from freight that could otherwise be carried on a trucks. And there are probably 75,000 over-the-road trucking companies, and it's a very brutally competitive market. And for railroads to attract that freight, they have to provide good service and better prices and take advantage of their efficiencies of carrying a lot of goods a long way very cheaply. You know, it's a challenge for them to be able to continue to grow their business and charge enough to generate enough revenue to invest back in their system. And it's in some ways a conundrum. You know, railroads to grow their markets have to be able to provide better service, and in order to provide better service, they have to be able to invest in their networks and have their tracks in good shape and not have delays and, you know, slow orders and, you know, things when they have to slow down. But in order to be able to have enough money to invest in their system, they have to generate enough revenues to invest in them. And to generate enough revenues to invest in them, they have to be able to provide better service. So it's kind of a conundrum that they're in. They can't grow unless they give better service, and they can't give better service unless they grow. And so, you know, part of our job is to help railroads navigate through that very difficult thing. The market has demanded that freight railroads succeed because they need them to.
How is performance measured and what's done with this information? We'll ask Roger Nober of the Surface Transportation Board when the Business of Government Hour continues.